We were supposed to record dialogue for the Throwback Friday for Fear, right? But then Matt decided not to join.
Right, and so, I wasn't part of a thing when Fear came out, so I don't really remember that episode at all.
And I didn't listen to it.
Right, yeah. And I did listen to it and wish that I hadn't.
Take one. Good evening.
It's that time of year. Halloween.
When all the world comes together to celebrate a common human emotion, fear.
Fear.
Fear!
So here at Infants on Thrones, we thought we would share with you some of the things that have scared the bejesus out of us over the years.
Things like...
Something has actually come into the room and physically sat on your chest. Like little goblin things. Horrible little things.
And this.
I think superstitions are there for a reason. And maybe to stay away from certain things, there's maybe some good reasons to do that.
And this.
There is actually something that hunts us in our dreams.
So sit back, turn out the lights, and get ready to feel like a kid again.
Because maybe, just maybe, the boogeyman really is coming to get you.
Take two. It's
horrible.
This is Infants on Thrones.
Throwback Friday.
All right, fear.
It doesn't look like. Yeah. So what did you think of it when you listened back to it?
Oh, I felt there were so many parts of it that were great. It just needed a hatchet of an editing job rather than a scalpel. And I remember when I was listening back and cutting and some of the edits I made. Those were all just some of them were okay friends and some of them were kind of acquaintances. So I was almost fearful of cutting
right
people because I didn't want to offend
like their
them.
Feelings. Yeah,
yeah. And so there's so much that I kept in that for that reason, rather than for good content. And in retrospect, I would have been pared down to almost in a third or in half, I think.
Well, so this is what's funny, because that's what I did earlier today. I chopped it down for, it was like an hour and 13 minutes, and now it's like the version that we'll put out for the Throwback Friday is 34 minutes or something.
Awesome.
But I didn't pull out any of these parts that you're talking about. I pulled out the stuff that I did and our entire discussion at the end.
Yeah, the discussion was not necessary. We could have killed it with just the... I thought the same thing when we went to discussion. I was like, what? There's the discussion? What are
yeah,
we doing?
And it was very forced, and it felt really preachy.
Yeah.
You know, like I just kind of like took the reins. I'm like, okay, guy. It was like the Sunday school things. Like, what
about what Chet said?
What is the thing that we need to do when we kneel down and fold our arms? What is that called? Prayer, right? And what you know, it's like I was trying to lead. So, what are the things that the church makes us afraid of? Because the church instills fear in us. And why do you think they do that, guys? It's control. I mean, say control. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. It was. It just was bad and boring, and we weren't.
Yeah. Well, I really working. Liked. I liked Seth, but I cut him way down. Like he likes to talk. If you've ever talked to Seth before, he's a good dude, smart dude. But you know, I thought I pulled out some of the real nuggets that. But we talked for probably 40 some minutes. So I
cut that.
Oh. Well,
and mostly it's because I didn't like my comment, you know, because this was when we were still feeling our way into Infants on Thrones, and like we wanted to model Radio Lab, and right. So it's like, let's take a lot of different people's stories and turn it into one story.
Right.
And
that takes so much fucking effort, man.
It did, and it was a real stretch, you know, like going
Tom, gosh.
Going from talking about Ouija boards to Night Terrors, which I mistakenly kept calling something else besides Night Terrors. I don't remember what it was, but I'm yelling at myself the whole time. That's not what it is. and then from that to lucid dreaming.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know, some other thing like modeling after the Joseph experience, and then Randy's story, you know,
just
like
thrown in there. Yeah,
it's all these things that trying to stitch them together with really forced threads, and right. So with this one, I just am kind of cutting it and letting the pieces be what they are, because I really liked what you did with the Ouija board. Even though you said that you would cut the people, I liked hearing their voices and hearing their stories, and I liked hearing the interaction. Like, it was cool. It felt like I was at a party where there was fun energy, you know?
Hello, and welcome to Infants on Thrones. This is Glenn, and today, along with Matt, Randy, and Jesse, you'll be hearing from many people who shared many fearful experiences with us, more than we could actually use. So let's kick it over to Matt as he tells us about his first great fear, the Ouija board.
So when I started thinking about fear and supernatural experiences, one of the first things I thought about was the Ouija board. What better way to have a supernatural experience than to call it out from something distributed by Hasbro? Now, I had some experience with a Ouija board. When I was a kid, I remember being scared of the movie Witchboard, but that might have just been Tawny Katan. I even played one once. That amounted to a group of horny 8th graders asking it who liked us and whether or not one of the guys would get lucky. So I planned a little Ouija board party. But getting this together was a little more difficult than I originally thought it would be. We had plenty of volunteers to play, but nobody was willing to host. Just so you know, that's how my wife started the conversation. Just so you know, conversations never end up where you want them to. Just so you know, she began, "You aren't doing that Ouija board thing here," she continued. I laughed. I really assumed she was just playing a part, giving me some material for the podcast. She wasn't. "Just so you know," I responded, "they aren't real." I was very pleased with myself. I felt like Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction with the ultimate retort. "Just so you know," she replied, "I don't care, you're not doing it." And with that, she had won, just so you know. There's no arguing with logic like that. A friend volunteered his house, but his wife put a stop to that too. So it seemed we were doomed to never even do this party. The fear of the Ouija board was going to prevent us from exploring why people are afraid of Ouija boards. Fortunately, my wife compromised. We could host, but all paranormal activity had to take place outside. So that's what we did. So what happened when a group of adults got together and tried to take it seriously? Before we answer that, here are some of my friends and their reasons for wanting to come to a Ouija board night.
Hi, I'm Becky Watson. I had some experience with Ouija board as a preteen, so I thought it'd be kind of fun to see what we have going on now.
I'm Paul Watson. I've had zero experience with Ouija boards, but I've had a lot of interest in the occult, and I've actually dealt with some witches.
Me too, my friend.
Now I'm a mentalist and a hypnotist.
Hi, my name is Micah Nicolaisen. I'm here just mostly out of curiosity because, you know, like people have already said, I grew up in the church as a Mormon, and, you know, the Ouija board is like one of those taboo things that you don't do, and you always hear those sort of mythological experiences where Satan appears. And
I was just going to make an anal sex joke. Anytime somebody says taboo, I just go right to anal sex. Ouija board, anal sex, they're all taboo.
Nice.
Hi, I'm Lauren. I'm here just out of curiosity as well. And to be a bad girl, I mean, I heard all the stories growing up. Ooh, yeah, my mom was terrified.
Are we back to anal sex, or?
No.
Oh.
My mother was terrified of
Ouija. See, it's stuff like this that Glenn gets so upset at me.
Sorry, Glenn.
I'm Tanya Francis. I'm here mostly out of curiosity, too. My mother told me some really frightening stories as a kid, and many trepidation I have is that I'm going to psych myself out when I go home tonight. So that's all.
So are you a little nervous?
A little bit, just because.
Is it the candles?
No.
Is it my anal sex jokes?
Maybe a little.
That's fair. That's absolutely fair.
I am Heather Borrego. I've done quite a bit of this, actually. Embarrassing, kind of. I actually do believe in this quite a bit. If you, coming from me, it's odd, but if everybody's serious about it.
I'm Dave Borrego. I come from a long line of family in the occult. My uncle, Aleister Crowley, great uncle. Song written about him. No, I'm just kidding. Mr. Crowley, anybody know that's... But no, it's always been a fascination to me. So tonight, it's a curiosity, and I'm just trying to come to a conclusion for myself whether this is real or not, and I really haven't thought about it a whole lot.
My name is Todd Miller, and I grew up as a Mormon and always been scared of the Ouija board. I always heard bad things. But I really don't believe in all that, and I'm here to try it out.
I'm Sandy Miller, and I grew up in a basically atheist family who always played with a Ouija board and had seances.
My name is Jamie Hollowell, and the only time I have anything with a Ouija board is I remember growing up once I saw it on TV and thought, that's kind of cool, and then I learned it was wrong, so, you know.
Wrong, you mean like bad, like taboo.
Right. Yeah, well, not even taboo,
like,
but
like
wrong,
anal
like...
sex.
I just remember having this curiosity about it and really wanting to try it, but that it was evil, and so that I couldn't do it because it wouldn't be safe to do it.
Wait, which one are we talking about? No.
You are, and you encouraged him, listen to you. Luigi?
Troy Hollowell, I believe I know how Ouija boards work, and I don't believe they're magical or spiritual, but I think they're very revelatory.
Curiosity, fascination, skepticism, arrogance, and past experiences all brought us together to see what the Ouija was all about. To prepare us, we figured we should invite the proper spirit by talking about experiences we had with the Ouija board, or stories we had heard about people using Ouija boards.
Played with the Ouija board when I was probably 11 with some friends over at the friend's house. Knew that technically I was told I shouldn't mess around with them, but we goofed off with it, and I never had any trouble with them.
When I was younger, preteen, we did actually seances. The candles would blow out, a knife flew across the room. So we had some serious situations. It was a slumber party.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided to do a seance and like light as a feather, straight as a board, and you know, just all those fun little quirky games that, but it got serious and it was extremely frightening, and her mom came running out, and so she was okay with it, but she, you know, told us how that we shouldn't do that. So, and then with the Ouija board, when I was 19, my friend and I decided to do a Ouija board. We asked it some pretty, like, direct questions, and actually now looking back, some of those things actually did come true. One being, I had just started dating a guy. It knew... His name was Bob, and it knew that I was going to marry him and that we would be together like a total of 5 years. And excuse me, and that's exactly what happened. It did say that he was going to be a police officer and that he was going to die in the line of duty. He was a Marine, and he never did die. So I don't know if it's like subconscious that it happened like that, or I don't know, but I totally believe in it, especially that subconscious knife flying across the room. That was truer and realer than anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, my mom was very into the Ouija board, and I remember in fourth grade we were playing with it, and she asked who I liked. Did I have a crush? And it betrayed me. It totally spelled out Joey Sellers, and he was a new kid too. So I don't think she could have known. I don't know. Who knows?
Your mom and you both were holding it.
Yes, we were on either side of the. the board. Yes. And but, you know, East Coast thing, I grew up where Heather grew up in Virginia, and it was a very big thing in Northern Virginia. Everyone had seances growing up. We brought back John Lennon after he died. We totally did.
How was he doing?
He was a really peaceful man. He was good. We were calling forth his spirit, and similar to Heather's, the candle went out, this antique phone in the basement rang once, and all the lights went out, like to the point where her dad had to flip the breaker. So coincidence or funky spiritual shit?
Has anyone heard any Ouija board legends or stories growing up to cause you to be scared? And that's Paul.
Yes, this is Paul. A companion of mine, when he was, 12, 13, 14 years old, and he was going over to a friend's party, and they were playing with it, and as soon as he walked in, it stopped working, and he said that was because he had the priesthood.
Wait a minute. It's interesting. So this was a first-person story that he said this happened to him.
He walked in. Yes, it stopped, and they all looked at him, and they knew. I think most of them weren't LDS, and he was not into that at all. And so when he came in, it stopped working completely, and they looked at him, and they couldn't feel the vibe anymore. Because of the priesthood.
The priesthood story is one that I've heard, too, is that a guy who's getting ready to go on their mission comes in and the Ouija board stops. But the way I heard it was once he leaves, they ask the board, "Where'd you go?" And it spelled out, "Priesthood scared." I just got goosebumps when I told that story.
That's what I was going to say. If you didn't feel goosebumps during that story, then you weren't properly conditioned as a Mormon, because that's a result of that Mormon conditioning that's going to be with you the rest of your life.
Did you feel goosebumps?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. I don't believe it a bit, but I felt goosebumps. The spirit testified to me.
Tanya, you have one?
Oh, actually, it's not that much. My mom and her friends, when she was a teenager, went out to this abandoned old house in Pima, Arizona. And
nothing good happens in Pima, Arizona.
Nothing good happens in Pima, Arizona. That's right. Tasty freeze, yeah. And so they were playing with a Ouija board, and I don't remember all the details, but they were asking this thing, you know, questions, and it was answering pretty accurately. And then they asked something about, "Where are you?" And it said, "Here." And scared the hell out of her. I don't know, the way she told it, it always scared me, and it just had like these lasting echoes on me, you know. So
let me tell you my ultimate Ouija board story that scared me to my bone. And I don't remember when I heard it, but I remember retelling it on my mission and just really getting a freaky feeling. So
maybe bones or bone?
His bones. What I was a freaky feeling on his mission.
What were you asking?
The story was that you never ask serious questions, just like you were saying, when are you going to die or those types of things. But I heard a story about a group of kids who decided to ask it the ultimate question: is the church true? Cutting to the chase, what everyone wanted to know. And the story was, the kid or the two kids that were in there, it went black and they got attacked and came out, and there was a singe mark, a hand mark, like a burn mark of a hand on one of the kids' thighs. And what they theorized was that they were too close to the truth, and that they asked the ultimate question, and that Satan or spirits can't lie. And so it was going to tell the kids yes, but instead of telling yes, lashed out and attacked these kids. I know, right? Did you?
The father of all lies can't lie.
But regardless, this is something that's ingrained in not just Mormon culture, but I think everybody's culture. Movies, everything else, kind of in culture, has people scared of this to the point where they don't sell this in a lot of places. So I tried to find this board for this night, and I went to Walmart. They don't have it. Apparently, they did at one point, and they stopped selling it. Went to Target. They didn't have it.
Isn't it like Hasbro? I mean, seriously, how could they make something so evil? They make, you know, little baby toys.
They do make Monopoly, too.
Toys R Us does still sell it.
Is that where you got it? Yeah.
No, actually, I decided to go to the most evil of all evil places in the world, Craigslist.
That's good.
Yeah.
Craigslist.
Yeah, so this is actually a used Ouija board that has, yeah, some other people's juju on it.
So there's missed encounters?
Could be. And I won't reveal, but I did ask the lady, I have her on tape talking about her experiences with it, and I don't really want to share it right now.
Hi, sorry for making you wait.
No, you're fine. Is this for you?
No, we're actually, you want to know what we're, I'm doing a podcast about Ouija boards.
Are you really?
Cult. Yeah, I do
a
podcast, so I'm trying to find, yeah, that's two pieces, that's pretty much it.
Everything's in there.
So, you got any great stories for me about why you're getting rid of it because you were so concerned?
I got it from my teenage granddaughters, and their moms were like, I don't think so. But I had one when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
We used to, at our sleepovers and slumber parties, we used to do them all the time.
You got any good experiences from when you did them when you were a kid?
No, but we used to just ask, like, you know how you are when you're in high school? You're like, what boy likes me? And, you know, that kind of stuff, but... You know, yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it was still available, and I'm glad we'll bring all the evil spirits to our house then.
All right then.
You've been okay so far.
People are like creepy about it. Yeah. They're just, it's a teenage fun thing, and they're fun for, like I said, we did it all the time.
Right.
I probably got mine when I was probably 13. We did them all the way for probably 5 years. When we had sleepovers with our girlfriends and stuff.
Yeah.
Bring the Ouija board. Like, okay.
That was great.
Yeah. We had a great time with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, so your daughter didn't want your granddaughter to
her
have
mother's
it?
Kind of religious. Uh-huh. So not my it's my stepdaughter's my husband's daughter, but her mother's kind of creepy about it. So she's like, I don't want to put you on for anything. So I'm like, okay.
So do you think that's kind of the thing is the religious people are more concerned with them?
I think it's witchcraft. But you know, it's just a teenager thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's one perspective. But not everybody feels that way. In fact, a couple of friends who heard about the Ouija board night wanted nothing to do with it, but they were willing to be interviewed about why. This is Jody.
Jody Goodman of Mesa, Arizona, and I'm friends with Matt and the whole Ouija board crew.
And Ouija board scared the bejesus out of her.
The Ouija board has always scared me. I've never played with one. I've been invited to a couple, you know, slumber parties when I was a young girl, when I knew they were playing with those, and I always stayed away, always. Instantly, I knew I didn't want to go, and I actually questioned your guys' sanity for wanting to do it. And as I began to think about it more, I wondered if this group was going in the wrong direction.
Like we are in Satan's grasp or something.
Kind of. I think a lot of times people want to show how fearless they are or how they don't believe in superstitions. But I think superstitions are there for a reason. And, you know, traditions, maybe to stay away from certain things, there's some good reasons to do that, to follow that advice.
Now, before we're too tough on Jody, keep in mind, she represents the attitude of a lot of people out there, your friends, family, and maybe even some of you. She said something that a lot of people might believe, that playing with things like this, the Ouija board, tarot cards, seances, opens the door to the other side and invites that spirit into one's life. So I asked her where that fear comes from.
I'm not sure. I know, like I said, there's been slumber parties. I think I did, at one point, my cousins next door when I was growing up would do a weird thing where we would go into the bathroom, turn off the lights, and chant Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, lots of times.
I think that game's called Bloody Mary.
Okay, and wait for her to appear in the mirror.
Which are delicious, by the way.
Okay. And I think I saw something at that point. And I, you know, just the movies I've seen, like one movie comes to mind, The Skeleton Key, where the lead character never quite believes. And then slowly but surely, as different events happen, she becomes a believer. And the premise of that movie was the voodoo can only work if the person, the subject of it is a believer. If you don't believe in it, it won't work on you. But the minute you cross over to where now you're a believer in the dark magic or the dark arts, then that's the power. And so I guess the fear would be kind of along that plot line is something would happen with the Ouija board or the tarot cards or something that would make me slowly maybe give more value to it, and then, you know, maybe give more power to that side.
Despite Jody's warnings and concerns, we approached the other side with a board. Almost everyone took a turn. We asked the board about the nature of God and evil. We asked religious questions and questions about the universe. We asked about relatives that were dead and asked whether someone would have kids in the future or be successful in their new job. We even asked it who would win the upcoming presidential election. By the way, the answer is the Mormon. The Mormon will win the election. At least according to the Ouija board. But the questions and the answers aren't really as important as what the people present were experiencing. The fear that they were feeling. The fear of using a board that might just be a conduit to the other side. But what happens when the spirit comes out of the board and into the bedroom?
The first time it happened, I was aware of the fact that I'd woken up, and I felt fully alert, as if I was, as if there was something, some kind of danger. My skin was covered in goosebumps. And sometimes I've actually had, like, hallucinations where it's actually been, something has actually come into the room and physically sat on my chest, like little goblin things, horrible little things. Really, really scary. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but while it's happening to you, you really do fear for your life.
This clip comes from a production by Discovery World, and these little goblins have been described as a number of different things over the ages. In Persian culture, they're called Bakhtak, an evil ghost that torments you at night. In India, she's the Mohini, a beautiful but deadly enchantress. In Slavic cultures, he's an elf-like gypsy man with wild glowing eyes who sits on your chest riding you like a horse. In Chinese culture, it's Pinyin Gui Ashen, or something like that. It means the ghost pressing on bed. And in Old English, she was called Mar, which is why today we have the term nightmare. These are all examples of the type of visions that people see during a condition called sleep paralysis. And sleep paralysis is a very real human condition that produces very real fear. What varies from culture to culture is the way that this experience is understood.
Yeah, this is Chet. I'm from Salt Lake City. Yeah, I definitely had my fair share of experiences. One happened to me last night, actually. I woke up in the middle of the night. I looked over towards our closet, and I could see the shape of this freaky-looking clown hovering in the doorway of the closet. And I rattled my head, and I think, no, it's not there. You're just ridiculous. You know, you're tired. And I kind of try to gather myself, and I look over there again, and it's still there. And then I start to think about it more. I'm like, okay, this is just ridiculous. It's not there. You're messing with yourself. Wake up, look again, and it's going to be gone. And I look again a third time, and it's there. So I roll over, you know, put my head in my pillow, and I just make myself go to sleep. And then I wake up the next morning, like, that really happened.
Chet believes that he was conditioned to see these kinds of night terrors because of stories that he heard as a child at church.
And it's really odd because you look back and you think, what were these young men and young women's leaders thinking? But, you know, back in the 80s, early 80s especially, this was right when I came into, you know, about when I was 12 years old and just entering into, you know, in our religion, at 12 years old, you become part of the youth program. And then you get to go to firesides. And a fireside is when the youth gather and a speaker comes. It's like a devotional type meeting. Well, anyway, these youth leaders organized a meeting up in this mountain canyon for when it would be dark. And coincidentally, the location of the fireside was at a place called Devil's Gate. And they invited a speaker that came to speak about the dangers of Satan, you know, and and the influences of Satan and his ability to not only tempt a person, but literally possess. And, you know, he talks specifically about the dark kind of sides of, you know, Satan, I guess is the best way to put it. So, yeah, you look back and you think, how crazy was this?
I don't know how crazy it is. It's certainly pretty common. And more often than not, it functions to validate belief.
So I really was attributing it to, okay, Satan's trying to get a grasp on me somehow. It just solidified that for me. I was convinced that, okay, this is a good example of, you know, you play with fire, you're going to get burned.
And who's the last guy on our panel that you would expect to have a supernatural experience like this? Well, if you said Randy Snyder, you are correct.
It's 1994. I'm serving my mission in Arizona Tempe Mission, and I happen to be called to the Salt River Reservation. And when you're on a mission on a reservation, the members love telling stories about skinwalkers, about Hoofy the devil, who was bottom half of his body was goat, top half of his body he was in like a tuxedo or a suit, and was very charming, and you had to be careful because he was so charming. And so you hear all this folklore. And one evening, we went to bed, and I still remember I had the bed that was facing down the hallway, and my companion was in the bed deeper into the room. And I had, that night, for whatever reason, we had the door open in our bedroom so I could see down the hallway. And I wake up, and I'm paralyzed. I cannot move, but I can move my eyes. And I look down the hallway, the foot of my bed, and this gray cloud, this almost organic cloud, I can see it in the hallway, and it starts to come closer to me and closer to me. And I'm just filled with terror because I can't move, and this thing that I don't know what it is exactly is coming towards me. And then in my paralyzed state, this amorphous organic cloud coalesces above my body, and the terror increases. And at that very top point of that cloud, exactly where my face is, all of a sudden, this twisted, evil, filled with contempt, like it just hates me to the core, face is right above me. And I could just feel it. It was just like the Joseph Smith story. It was like I couldn't speak. I couldn't move. And I was scared out of my mind. And I tried to do what I was taught. If you're ever confronted by an evil spirit, you raise your hand to the square and you say, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave." And I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. And so in the height of my panic, I mustered all the energy that I had in my whole soul, my whole body, and just went, boom, it disappeared. I sat up, and I looked over at my companion. He went, kind of grunted, rolled over, and went back to sleep. And I was convinced that I was attacked by a demon. I don't think that I thought it was Satan himself, because there's so many sons of perdition, but I honestly felt like I had been attacked.
And for Randy the believer, this was proof in the existence of God and everything that he had ever been told.
That was like proof that the church was true. I told that story so many times in like Sunday school to the youth, not Sunday school, but like priesthood, you know, teaching the 16-year-olds and stuff, just to make them have a sense that it was, you know, this is real and this is serious, and Satan wants to stop us.
So what's the explanation to the Ouija board? Well, there's something called ideomotor movements. These are essentially micro-movements, small little movements that aren't perceived by the brain or the muscles because they're not intentional. The same thing can happen if you hold a thread with a paperclip or a needle.
The homemade pendulum will swing because it's being moved. Pregnant women will often use this method to see if they're having a boy or a girl. It's a good way to test what the person holding the thread thinks the baby will be, not what they want it to be. That hand that's holding the thread is moving, even though the brain and the arm isn't trying to make it move, and even if the person doesn't perceive it moving. The Ouija board's the same thing. The answers are what the people on the board think will happen, so their micro-movements move the planchette to an answer. A good way to test this out on the Ouija board is to use a blindfold. At our Ouija board night, we didn't use a blindfold, but we did other experiments. We asked questions that only people that weren't touching the board knew, and every time the answer was wrong. We used these types of techniques in order to show that when the people who were touching the board could guess about an answer, there would be an answer. Yes, no, but when we asked specifics about something the people on the board had no idea about, we ended up with a jumbled mess. What was interesting is after we went through using the Ouija board and explained how the Ouija board works, a couple people talked about how they felt.
It's pretty much what I suspected was the truth. I mean, I knew it wasn't real, but I was still a little creeped out, you know, because of all the stories I've been told. So, yeah, those are totally dispelled. So
you feel now going forward, if you don't have the same feelings that you did before about a Ouija board?
Right. You're right. I don't.
I had a lot of uneasiness beforehand about it. I wouldn't say I was scared because, you know, for me, you know, like, yeah, because I'm a tough guy, right? But for me, like, what I was surprised, like, you know, I didn't have any, like, dark feelings. I didn't feel, you know, like there was something evil going on. And I kind of expected those things to happen. Even if nothing big or crazy happened, I expected that I'd have that same uneasiness or sort of, like, darkness. But I didn't feel any of that at all. So I was actually surprised by that.
I even got one more just so you know from my wife. But this one was, just so you know, you can bring the Ouija board back in the house and let the kids play with it if they want to. While I was talking to Jody, she brought up my wife, and that even she didn't want it played in her house. I told Jody about my wife's conversion, and that now that she had seen how it works and learned about what makes it tick, that she doesn't need to be afraid because she had actual experience. And I asked her whether or not that would be something of value in order to confront her fears.
Well, I think what you said really doesn't take away because I believe what you bring to the Ouija board, if it's coming from a place of fear, but you do believe there's something to it, you can create that something bad. And so, I mean, maybe it was a safe place and you were joking and laughing and stuff, but I don't care where that fear came from. I'm not ready to play with the Ouija board.
When the cryptos creak and the tombstones quake,
spooks come out for screaming wake.
Happy haunts materialize
and begin to vocalize. Creepy grinning ghosts come out to socialize.
Exactly how I remember it. Now, I say all these things, all these memories I share, because I've read too much on the fallibility of memory and confabulation. I say all this with a humility that this is how I remember it. I'm not sure if it's exactly how it happened.
You can be as humble and self-defecating, is that right, as you want. Don't be self-defecating. But self-defecating.
All over myself. I should have put...
Yeah, that's what happens when you're full of shit.
I do love my man in the street interview with the woman that I bought the Ouija board from. That was
but I kept picturing, and I do too, but I kept picturing that she was ready to leave and you're like grabbing her from behind her arm, like, hey, well tell me I'm recording this. She's like, okay, here's your game, there it is, I'm off. Oh yeah, well, do you have any great experiences with this?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And I heard that back too. I thought it was a lot more natural in the moment than hearing it back now 3 years later.
Right. Yeah. What was it? Some other things that I thought? Oh, the woman that you interviewed that thought that you were all going in a bad direction.
That's Jody. Do you know Jody?
No.
Yeah, she's
So where is she after 3 years?
So I asked her. She happened to be over here like last weekend, and it was right after I listened to her, and I asked her that. I said, where is she? She's like, oh, yeah, I'm still – that's still bad mojo. That's still best. I still believe. I still think.
Because she said something, and I think it was at the tail end that it was like – I'm not even open to considering new information. Like, I'm not interested in moving from this position that I'm at all. You know, so even if it's proved that there's nothing to it, I'm not interested in going there. I'd rather hold on to what I have. You know, that was both fascinating and frustrating.
Well, but she's interesting, and I want to interview her because this is kind of a through line in her life. She's still as a... I'll call her a non-believer, is still active, is in this Relief Society presidency, and still has the dream of having that temple marriage, Mormon marriage, because that's what she started her life anticipating and expecting. So she still maintains a hope and a belief in that too. So it's kind of her, I don't know, personality, I guess.
Yeah.
So the bleeping threw me off. Swear words.
Oh, I see. And I didn't listen to the full panel discussion. I listened to most of, like, maybe the first half of it. And when I heard a bleep over Randy saying shit, I started laughing so hard because you had said anal sex like 5 or 6 times previously, and I didn't bleep anal sex, but I bleeped shit.
Right. Well, and that was at the time where we had multiple conversations real early on about content and working kind of blue or perception, and so that was, and so I referenced that. Yeah, Glenn gets annoyed when we do this, and. Yeah. And we real soon after that, just as a group, we said, let's just whatever.
Let's just we'll be what we are. We'll be who we are. And the people that don't like it, they can filter us by just not listening.
Yeah. And I think it served us pretty well. Although the beeps did, I did laugh about it, about them. And it didn't necessarily take away. It was just, it was funny.
Yeah, it was. It was funny. But the whole thing was... It was painful to listen to.
Forced is the right word. It's very we kind of took ourselves a little too seriously on that episode.
On that episode,
like,
yeah.
Like we're really insightful and digging deep here, and
it's not really that deep.
It's not.
And the whole time I, you know, like wanting to recreate this liminal experience, which is a word from my folklore days, you know, it's part of like rites of passage, this liminal phase that's like time out of time, this creepiness. And so telling legends around or ghost stories around a campfire, and you get that creepy feeling, you know, that there's things that you can do that I was very aware of in production with music and vocal inflections and things like that, that was more important really to me in that episode than getting all intellectual, which was just a complete fail.
in my commentary that I add, kind of my interjections, it's painful because it just feels so, who are you? What are you doing? Dude?
That's why I took all of mine out.
Oh, but you left mine in.
Well, I like yours. I like yours better than I like mine. What can I say?
You know? No, but I liked that I did the interview with Chet, who was my missionary companion, but you took it and kind of provided commentary and did it. Yeah, I really liked.
But I don't know why I did that. I don't remember why it happened that way.
Oh, because his story was closer to the sleep paralysis or the night terrors. Yeah, and so I think that's why.
Yeah, it felt a little weird because as I was looking back, I'm like, I don't remember interviewing him. Like, I remember interviewing Andrew and Brian, but I didn't remember Seth. So that you brought that up, I'm like, okay, that was another one that you did. The whole thing was just strange. But the thing that I really liked that you had said, when you were talking about the game that you play with Kristen – the just so you know, is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah.
That was great. That was really, really good.
See, I felt that was awkward. When
No, and especially like the third one, you know, or like we had one final, just so you know. That was really good. And, we weren't doing a lot of scripted stuff back then, you know. So this, I think that was one difference with this one. There were things that were scripted like that. That was more of a reading and a performance that sounded very natural. That I thought you did really well. So
that's kind, but I think you're being kind. It was funny to reflect back on where Kristen was from the Supernatural and all that back then, and kind of the first introduction to her as a character, as a person, and then really to get to know her as a person in those subsequent episodes. So that was I had forgotten that she had at least a part, I guess, in that one. But I love your music. The music, the creepy hymns,
spirit and spirit of God thing.
The spirit of God is great.
It was a little overused.
I'm all right with it. It's great. Like that really should be playing outside on Halloween on my house here.
I do. I've used it.
Oh, it's fantastic. If you send me put that in Dropbox, or do we have it somewhere? Because I'm gonna.
I included it as one of the tracks on the Infant Sing thing that we did.
Okay. So
you could pull it from there. I could put it in Dropbox and send you a clean copy.
If it's on there. And then the last part was Jesse. The presence of Jesse just cracked.
Oh, right. That we kept calling Scott Jesse.
Naturally, too. We're like, oh, yeah, Jesse this and that.
Yeah. That is so weird. And that Jesse, the guy who's hiding behind the name, would go on to be the any opposed guy. It's just awesome.
Mormon Genome.
Right, Mormon Genome. He's like, I still don't like wearing that Mormon Genome shirt in public just because I don't want to be associated with Mormon stuff. But, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, I'm glad you edited down. I would have liked to take a pass at some of it, but I think it will be so much tighter and more interesting at 30-something minutes instead of an hour and 40 or whatever we were at.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it. Listening back to it, there was an element of nostalgia to it.
Yeah.
Certainly, because I still like all those people, and I love Chet. I got to tell you, he is so natural and was so good, and he was... I haven't talked to him since basically my mission. I hit him up on Facebook. Hey, I'm doing this podcast thing. Would you be willing to do it? And he's like, yeah, sure, right on. Let's do it. And we set it up without a question. And he's kind of like, so what is this podcast thing? And I'm, it's not really. He's a total believer.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of tiptoeing around it. And he's like, oh, all right, not my thing, but yeah, let's go. And then he just goes into it. It was real natural. So it's always fun to hear him.
So have you had any interaction with him over the last 3 years? We didn't convert him?
No, none.
No.
None. Oh, this is unrelated to that, but a friend of mine went up to Utah and was visiting with his friend, and his friend is just now leaving the church.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'm trying to kind of figure these things. He's like, I don't know. I started to listen to this Babes on Thrones.
Babes, yeah.
Podcast. And he goes, wait, you mean Infants on Three? He's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, yeah. Two of those guys were really good friends of mine.
Yeah.
So, no, not Chet, though. He apparently didn't continue listening.
Mm.
All right. Oh, wow. That's a good, Halloween episode. We had a couple, didn't we? Didn't we have a couple Halloween? We had this one. We had Hell House.
Yeah, we did. I don't remember if it was last year or the year before. We did a couple of devil ones back to back.
Yes.
Like we did. I think it was last year because like we had Tannehill on for one. And it was just frustrating. And
that was the end of Tannehill. We're like, yeah, this is over. We're done with this.
Yeah, the circus has run its. Yeah. The clowns aren't as interesting as they used to be.
Right. He was so fun 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's been 3 years since this Fear episode. That's the other thing is the timing of it kind of struck me how long it's been.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like that long ago. And that's I mentioned in that, and because we were just talking about this, and this is why it's good to have. It's good to have this podcast because you say something every once in a while that will give you a chance to center yourself on time or to recalibrate as to when things happen. And I had mentioned that I was just in the temple, and that was the last time. So now I at least know when I was last in the temple and had last had my temple recommended, and that was 2012. There you go.
That's an important thing to know, I guess.
I don't know. It seems there are milestones as you transition out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I wished I would have journaled a lot more as far as when you take off your garments, when you stop drink or when you start drinking, when you do all these different things, because it just seems to bleed together at some since the 2007 to now just feels the past 8 years feels like a blur.
Yeah, the drinking may have something to do with that too.
Yeah, it certainly contributes. It doesn't help.
Something strange in your neighborhood. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
If there's something weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Hi, guys. This is Destiny. And I'm recording this in my party line voice because, as a woman, I'm sure this will get me on the podcast, even if John Hamer says no. You can comment on this episode and others on the website infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating. And write a short review on iTunes. I did. Oh, did I ever? Anyone for the closing prayer?
I ain't afraid of no ghosts. Don't get caught alone, no, no.
Ghostbusters!
When it comes through your door, unless you just want some more, I think you better call.
I don't know if we're going to be doing this and become... I'm getting so burned out.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting really burned out. So I don't know. But, you know, I've been kind of burned out before. Never quite as much as I am right now.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, there's always, like, this drive to do something. So
yeah.
We'll see.
Well, so Heather was right. She's the beginning of the end.
Oh, sure. Anybody is. You know, it's going to end eventually anyway.
Some
might as well start somewhere.
Yeah, there's no question. It's been 3 years, man.
But I do feel like it's been... I made this joke when we recorded last night that we've set the bar really high on our SmackDowns, especially when we turn something around the next day. You know, like there's been a few things where we've done that. And so, like with this... The women in the priesthood essays from LDS.org.
Yeah.
We're getting to it. We've got it done. I think it'll come out on Sunday. Jake's working on the... We recorded it, you know, so Jake's working on the edit. But, no, I forgot my point. Oh, I said it's all downhill from now. We set the bar too high, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll be something where, you know, we release an episode once a month. Like, we might go back to what we started.
Yeah.
You know, like first year, it was maybe one a month.
One a week is ambitious. So, well,
two
you remember
a week or three a week sometimes.
Yeah,
we do. Yeah,
that's true. But I mean, we did the same thing with Lunchtime Movie Review, where we got to an episode a week for the same thing about 3 years, and but for Infants coming on, I would have probably still been doing that.
Yeah.
So, but that's still I'm gonna say it's prolific. That's I don't care what anyone says, man.
Yeah.
That's why it just cracks me up. Like that dude yesterday on the website said something like, "Oh, you guys are just shilling for the community of Christ. I'm out. I'm done listening." Like, seriously? Yeah. Two episodes a week for 3 years, and you're like, "Yeah, this one episode, I'm done."
Yeah, but you know,
okay. That's remarkable,
Glenn. That's all I'm saying.
Remarkable, remarkable indeed. You know, I just want to pause a moment for all of you listeners,
And I want to let you know that we here at Infants on Thrones, and especially me, Glenn Ostlund, as burned out as I may be getting, would at this point like to vow a solemn vow to all of you that from this point forward we will be much more sensitive to remarkable people. Because I understand that remarkable really only means that something's capable of having a remark made about it. And some people really deserve an adjective that's much more validating and creative, like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Or an adjective that actually says something other than that someone is say-somethingable. And an adjective that's not the equivalent of word oatmeal. It reminds me of this clip from the television show Freaks and Geeks, where the main character, Lindsay, intercedes when two obnoxious bullies are bullying a remarkable young man. So I'd like to end with this clip, and this will be my final word on the subject, along with my heartfelt apology to anyone whose heart has been shattered by previous invocation of this insensitive, abusive slur of a word. Because, look, if you've made the choice to listen to Infants on Thrones, and especially if you've encouraged others to listen as well, then you'll know that we are a rowdy group of guys, and we violate taboos, and we're often driven by our own ignorance, and our own stupidity, and sexist biases, and insensitivity in so many ways. But at the same time, if you've continued listening to us, I hope that part of that is that you've recognized that we're trying to understand our flaws and to improve on them in our own way, in our own style, and that we do stand up for the little people, like the gays, and sometimes even women. And next year, we plan to learn more about some of those weird Chinese customs and beliefs. But we certainly employ a distinct brand of facetious humor that we acknowledge isn't for everyone, as it can often be quite remarkable in and of itself. But look, all of this is my way of saying, okay, I've heard you, and I really have never intended to offend any remarkable people, so I really will stop using that particular R word, and maybe a few others. And now, the clip from Freaks and Geeks, which is a fantastic show, by the way, one of my all-time favorites, you should totally check it out, where a brave girl intercedes, and a young boy storms off of the bleachers, and accidentally, and quite unremarkably, breaks his arm.
I bet you could have been President Eli.
President Eli?
Ooh.
Okay.
You've been President Eli! President Eli!
Hey, you guys, cut it out. Leave him alone.
What? We're having a political discussion here.
No, we're political.
Eli, you don't have to talk to them. They're just being mean.
No, but they're my buddies.
Yeah, my buddies. We're his buddies. Ain't that right, Mr. President?
No, they're not, Eli.
I'm making them laugh, right?
Yes, not this way. There's a good kind of laughing and a bad kind of laughing. This is bad. Eli, they're only laughing at you because you're
remarkable.
I'm not
remarkable.
I'm
supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
They're being mean to you.
I'm not
remarkable.
Okay.
You're
remarkable.
I'm sorry.
No! No, I'm not
remarkable.
I'm supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I don't want to go on a dance with you.
Please.
No!
I'm sorry.
And I'm the mean one? How does that work?
You can say it backwards, which is docious ali expiastic fragicali rufus, but that's going a bit too far, don't you think?
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.